and welcome to episode 282 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The nuclear internet writer known as Tony Esmond.
Hello.
That was so joyful, Tony. So full of energy.
That's me. I'm just full of joy. That's
you are.
Every time I look at Twitter, it just cheers me up, and I can't stand not telling you.
Oh, well, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah. I'll show you in a minute.
don't make threats you can't back up, Tony.
Right, here we go.
Camera on.
No, Dan, don't do it. This is an audio show, so you're not going to see any of that horror, but you are going to listen to loads of talk about comics this week after a few busy episodes full of convention chat as we led up to Thought Bubble, the digital convention, and then did a crazy two-part episode where we talked to loads of amazing indie creators, and we hope you
Vince
enjoyed
still
that.
Tired.
I am. I tell you what, I am still tired. Is that weird? It's like I've got the post-convention buzz, even though I haven't left my house.
Yeah.
What's that all about? But anyway, after all of that, this week we change things up a bit. Yes, and we delve into the world of the underground, the outlaws, and the world of the strange. Don't know why I said that so dramatically. And who better to talk about all of that than Eddie Raymond, the brains behind the Strangers zine. Hello, Eddie.
Fellas, how's it going?
Good man, good to have you on.
Thank you
very much for joining us this week. Now, the Strangers zine has been mentioned a few times since over the past 6 months, would you say, Tony? When did it come onto your radar for the first time?
Yeah, about that long, I reckon. Yeah, I think it was during lockdown I first saw it.
And hopefully some of you lovely people out there have seen it and the sort of stuff that is inside. If you haven't, you probably will after this show, because that's what this show is all about. Now is the time. And now is the time for the sponsorship ad.
That was shit.
Like I said, I'm tired, man. I'm tired. I've also, my cat just walked into the room, and if he's looking at me, and I think, every time that happens, I'm like, don't meow at me because I'm recording. That's how professional
I'd love
I am.
Eventually if we discovered you don't actually have
a cat.
Just have a man who dresses as a cat who wanders about in your house.
Oh, God. Why do you have to say that? Well, there's going to be some art somewhere. Don't you dare come back. Don't you dare. But what you should all dare to do is check out Comic House, our lovely sponsor. And yeah, thanks. They're our sponsor, and they're an indie comic marketplace with a difference. They love comics. They're not just in it for the money. Money and comics. See, the jokes just keep coming on this show. Yeah. But if you go to Comic House, there's a huge selection of titles on the comichouse.com database. For instance, if people who self-publish their books for free, you can list them on there and start selling straight away to a new audience. And, you know, there's boxes, because there's no conventions at the moment. You've got boxes in your houses that you need to get rid of. Am I right?
Yeah.
See,
yeah, I've got lots of comics to sell.
Fucking hell. Yeah.
We'll plug our own shops later, don't you worry. On Comic House, they also have an app which is brilliant and amazing, and we love it, and it has like a featured section and all kinds, and they're adding stuff all the time. What is on there at the moment, Dan?
There's a whole slew of new titles. We've got Future Sci-Fi Tales Volume 1 Issues 1 and 2, both kind of on there. Aletheia Volume 4, The Monsters Cleanup Guy Volume 1, which looks really great. It's got a great black and white cover of a werewolf.
Oh, cool.
DH Volume 1, Issue 1. And the last one, which I've got to say very carefully, is Kalazar's Clock, Volume 1.
Sorry. Well done,
says,
Dan. Well done.
Says,
I'm glad I didn't say that.
There you trust the clock. So.
Well, I mean...
Never
I mean,
trust
do,
it.
Do you trust the clock? Can you handle the clock, Dan?
Ends up spitting at you at the end. Don't like it.
Oh. What a horrible alarm that is.
Sorry, Eddie.
Oh, dear. So how many
don't
minutes?
Don't you be a clock.
Yeah,
check
don't.
Out Comic
No, there's more on there. What about the... what's the
no,
other thing
more.
That's on there?
I'll tell you what's on
the
there.
Thing?
We've got El Marvo issue one.
Yes.
Because it's funny you should say that. Yeah, funny you should say that, because isn't El Marvo on Kickstarter at the moment?
Yeah, El Marvo issue two is now running on Kickstarter.
Who's drawn that, Dan?
That's me.
Yes.
Ben Aronson and Luke Condor writing it. It's a fantastic tale of a modern day luchador who gets transported into the future and has to fight a tyrant of the wastelands in a post-apocalyptic future.
That's all you want. That's all you want. Yeah,
I mean,
series.
All hyperbole aside, and I'm really proud of myself for being able to say that word.
Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. I will actually say, art-wise, it's some of your best work, Dan.
Flawless, man.
Oh, cheers,
never,
dude.
Never, really, never mind anything
else. Style as well,
yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
I like kind of like turning it out to 11 occasionally and just fucking going for it. It's got like steampunk dinosaurs, giants. There's tons of crazy stuff in it.
What was it like drawing dinosaurs?
Interesting. I kind of... it's a tough one. Robot dinosaurs are even tougher. It's,
oh, dear, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of cheated a little with the heads. I managed to kind of get a free 3D model and I'd move it on screen to where I wanted it, and then I'd quickly take a sketch from it and then draw it in. But like the bodies and everything, you had to kind of make up on the fly, which was quite tricky. But you can kind of fudge details with him. Like if you look carefully, like one body isn't quite the same as in the next panel, but I don't think you notice. Dude. Well, you will now, because I pointed it out.
Dude, that will get you kicked out of the magician's circle. Don't reveal too much.
Yeah.
All the secrets.
Yeah,
but it could. It's on Kickstarter. It's funding now. Could do with a little bit of help, man, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So big call out to all our listeners. So go and drop a few quid, because I certainly have. I think it's well worth it, man. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it.
There will be a link in the show notes. And obviously, follow Dan on social media, etc., and you'll be able to...
Yeah.
You can get issue one and two on there, and the PDFs, the print copies, everything. So go check it out.
Yeah,
I've gone for a physical copy is what I've gone for, because I like it in my hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Looking at it mostly.
Up my alley.
Good man.
Nice.
So as well as that, there's lots of other stuff on Comic House, which is obviously go to comichouse.com, find out more about the 14-day free trial for the app, and dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press we talk about every week. If you're a parent with kids and stuff, and you want to read some of the absolute disgraceful filth that some people call comics, but you don't want your kids to read it, then they do have a kids safety zone. So if you've got an account, you can set up a pin and stuff, so you can sort of control what your kids are reading. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get you. Kind of like Netflix. You have a kids account and they can see the kids comics and nothing else.
Why didn't that's so much better, Dan. Why didn't I just say that?
Fucking Netflix owes some money for all these adverts over the years. Never mind, you know.
Mm, yeah. Well, Netflix are basically like the Comic House for films, aren't they?
Yeah.
Fuck them.
Yeah, fuck them. Check out comichouse.com.
Except not enough porn.
That sounds like a sort of weird documentary that you find on Netflix. You'd be like,
if you put porn into Netflix, it just comes up with documentaries. It's shit. I don't want to watch a documentary, do I?
Whatever.
You should just fit it into the browser. It usually sorts it out.
Yeah, I'll give that a go.
So well prepared.
Yeah. Not on the dark web. Don't go there.
No, God.
These days, just don't go on the web.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. There's that... Well, funny enough, there's that Irving Welsh documentary. Have you guys seen it yet? About being, I think it's called Outrage or something, or Offended or something. It's called. Mm. Have you seen it this week?
No.
So good, man. And he meets this singer who got, I think she got sort of cancelled online or something for something. I'm not sure what it's about. Some sort of pop singer, and she says the coolest thing you can do now is not have any social media at all. That's the most revolutionary thing you can do. And I thought, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
I don't trust people that don't have social media. They're too happy.
Yeah. I mean, when people obviously are a big success, or like, you know, there's these huge actors or whatever, how rarely do they have a social media account?
It's all very professional, isn't it? It's all very just to promote stuff and say hello to people and then leave.
Yeah. They get people to handle it now, don't they? They just give an agency, just tweet something
and
safe.
And also,
every day.
I think if you're a creative person, I mean, we can't poo-poo it because of social media. This show exists because of a random couple of tweets.
Let
five years later, I'm so tired.
almost 5.5.
Oh God, make it stop. No, no.
Never say that. Take it back.
No, no. Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah, this show is going to keep happening, with or without social media. Although I don't know how I'd market it, but but obviously, you know, there's different sort of levels of it, aren't there? But I think when you're a creative person, in any, and not, I'm not just talking about comics. I think creative people, all of us, there is the creative ego, which I will say to everyone it's not concrete. No one has a concrete ego. No, I'm a fragile little flower. God, fuck's sake. I will crumble if someone says they don't like anything I've done. But yeah, but in terms of social media, there's a lot of people that are just shouting, being negative for negative sake, and it's pretty hard for a lot of people, isn't it? I think
it's fairly shallow. We can see, you know, there's transparency to what a lot of people do. I mean, we even have people big fights with us just to get a bigger name, you know, stuff like that. And you see that happen all the time. We're not into that. We're just about positive comics talk. There you go.
Yeah. We are, and we want to say thank you very much, actually, not only to all of the wonderful creators that we talked to over the Thought Bubble Week, and like lots of people, we hope everyone that was at the convention did really well for themselves, because there was far too many talented people to get a chance to talk to. But hopefully you lovely listeners discovered lots of books to add to your wish list, etc. And thank you very much for your support and your kind words on the shows.
I've got to say, mate, a lot of people were really encouraging. We got a lot of good feedback, and it was our biggest week for years, I think.
Yeah.
From listening figures, wasn't it?
I was thinking releasing two shows in a week. Obviously, you get the early sort of week bump, but how's it going to be later in the week? But people came.
Still going, man. Yeah, still rolling, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Work.
Good stuff. Yes.
And thank you to all the creators for shouting out about it and retweeting and just getting the word out as well.
If we've got new listeners off the back of it, this is we're going to keep rolling, guys. So, you know, we've got a great guest this week, and they just keep coming. So, stay with us.
We're going to finish off this year. What a year this year's been.
Christ.
But we're going to finish off this year as fun as we can possibly make it. Before, we've talked about some things we're going to do for 2021, aren't we? So, it's going to be a fun batch of shows to finish off the year. And
we've got an erotic show lined up.
that's going to be the Patreon only. No.
They would never do that.
No,
no one would sign up.
No. Oh, dear. But, you know, when it comes to fun and just madness when it comes to comics, sometimes you have to look to the outlaw side of comics, don't you? Just the unrestrained kind of, like, don't give a fuck, let's just have fun, and it's all about comics side of this medium that we love. And Tony.
Yeah, I mean, so we decided to I'm in bed with that side of comics, and I'm sure you two guys enjoy them as well. But one of the leaders in it now is Stranger Scene, who very kindly reviewed my comic recently in the last issue, and then the next issue is about to hit. So we thought it's about time we invited Eddie Raymond on, who's what are you going to call yourself? Editor-in-chief, Eddie? Is that a good idea, is it? Or
yeah, we'll do editor-in-chief. That sounds really official. I like that.
Yeah.
Hey, you like get this. Shooter, he could be the editor.
Sorry,
that's bad, man.
Eddie, just, that bit
out. I think I'll hop off now.
Yeah. Oh God.
So how did I mean, you clearly are. You just put the camera on very sexily for us a minute ago and showed us your spinner rack, which is about as sexy as it gets in comics. Yeah. But what led you into creating it? Eddie, it's great. We absolutely love it, man. It's so readable. It's like a proper zine, isn't it? What took your fancy around going that way?
Thank you. You know, I'd always wanted to do a zine. Like, I grew up in like the punk and hardcore scene my whole life, and like, you know, like zines were huge then. And I had a couple friends that did them. My friend Kyle runs a zine called Dead at Birth that has been pretty big for a while, but I just didn't have any design skills. And then, you know, after college, and I hopped into I work in marketing as my day job, and they like taught me all the design programs. And you know, eventually someone like dropped a copy of Amazing Heroes on my desk, and I had never heard of it. And I was like, wow, like people used to do this for comics as well. Like, I can so do this. And then you know, eventually I went to Comic Arts Brooklyn and saw Bubbles, and I was like, oh, like people are doing this now. And that was kind of the final push to just you know, just started up. And I think I launched the account on January 1st, and the first issue came out on Valentine's Day, and it's just been kind of a quick roll ever since.
That's good stuff. And you mentioned Bubbles. So Bubbles is sort of similar, isn't it? There's a, yeah, you're both, I think we're both, we're all in board. We're all in the same boat, aren't we? Sailing the ocean together with Bubbles. But how did you pick the people to focus in on? Because for those that haven't read it, it's a combination of comic strips, articles and interviews, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So how did you choose? Because you're quite out there with some of the characters we've got on. There's some you know, really interesting people. Matt Lesanowski's in the next issue, isn't he? If that's how you say his name, I always forget. Yeah, how did you find people straight away? You had a few connections, though, did you?
Yeah, so the first issue was kind of just me blind emailing. I met Paul Kirchner at CAB the same year that I saw about Bubbles. And I was on Google and I was like, oh, like he's from the same city that I live in. So I was like, oh, like this is perfect. You know, his art's really weird. And like, there weren't really many interviews on him. So it seemed like a good person to start with. And, you know, I just kind of like did like the form on his website. And then like within a couple of days, him and I were chatting back and forth. And the second interview was Don Lomax. And, you know,
I love him so much, man. You're right. He is the unheralded comic creator, isn't he?
Yeah.
His war books are incredible.
And it's funny because I didn't even start, like, I had no idea about the war books to begin with. I bought a bunch of biker mags at like a flea market, and I was just flipping through, like, talking about, you know, my dad grew up as a biker and, like, used to race and stuff like that. And I was flipping through, and he's like, oh, you should interview, like, one of the cartoonists in there. Like, that would be so cool. And I just, like, found, you know, Don's work and, you know, eventually, like, backtracked into finding out his email, like, through some weird, weird websites and just, you know, did the same thing. Like, shot him a note, said, like, hey, you know, I like your biker work. Like, I'd love to talk to you. And, you know, he was really great about it.
For those who don't know, he did a short Punisher run, didn't he? Is it where the Punisher returns to Vietnam or something like that,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah, in the 90s, I believe. Like, I think it was just called Punisher Nam. I think it might have been the second one. I think there was another.
That's right. Yeah. And so do you write and do all the interviews yourself now, do you? Do you choose everything? Are you like a one-man band still? Or
no, it's actually, it's gotten pretty, I'm especially with issue 4 now, there's like maybe 20 contributors.
Oh, right.
That's between people doing written editorial and then people that are doing comics as well. But since the second issue, my buddy Dave Moses, who you know, he's a comic creator as well and does a lot of good work, he kind of hit me up. He's like, hey, like, I'd love to contribute something. I'm thinking about, you know, interviewing Patrick Ian Rooks, who is, you know, he does Celery Sucks, which is another really great comic.
Yeah.
And you know, I had not had anybody else contribute yet, so I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And now he's done interviews in each one. You know, we're already like at like issue 6 with like what we're planning on doing. And then it's kind of steamrolled. You know, Ian Thomas, who writes for Comics Journal as well, kind of,
oh nice,
and you know, he wanted to do a comic which I didn't have room for. He's like, oh, but I'll do like reviews for you, or you know, things like that. And eventually just kind of a slow roll with issue 4. It was the first one I put out open call for submissions.
Yeah.
And brought in a lot of new people as well. So between 4 and 5, there's going to be a lot of new features, which I'm excited about.
Oh mate, so good.
Nice.
And there's I think you've hit it a perfect storm, haven't you? Because with people like Kayfabe promoting the likes of Tim Vigil and Ken Landgraf and all these sort of people, people are remembering the good side of the late 80s and early 90s, aren't they? They're remembering that sort of black and white revolution, aren't they, a bit, I think?
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that's where Strangers started from. And I feel like we veered a lot away from that. You know, we still keep the dollar bin section on each issue.
I love that.
I love that. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's great.
That ends up being a lot of the 80s black and white stuff. And then we've got that, But Wait, Don't Forget About this series as well, which it kind of like, it's like a, you know, it's a random ball of like what the issue is going to be, but you know, it ends up being something kind of cool and nostalgic. And just, you know, I want to call back to some things that like literally just nobody remembers, but then also, you know, trying to focus a lot more on the future has been kind of my main vision lately.
Yeah, I know. I'm just looking at your Ernie Cullen, the Medusa chain. So that's But Wait, Don't Forget About. And you feature on a story. There's been so many comics over the years. I'm constantly reminded of things that I either forgot or missed at the time. There's a lot of that going on, isn't there?
Yeah. And, you know, I originally wrote that section just so I could, like, print off this Jamie Hewlett comic from
Deadline. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And just do that. And then I was like, I don't want to, like, you know, I'd rather just have people draw their own bootlegs instead of, like, actually just stealing a comic from a magazine. session.
Yeah. On the subject, and we have to talk about this, on the subject of the dollar bin.
Sure.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but when we actually used to go to conventions as a trio, we had a competition to buy the shittiest comic for under a pound.
I love that.
Yeah. And we would usually find someone. Dean Beattie did it one year, didn't he? He decided for us. Yeah. Whoever, like, and whoever wins it, who has the shittiest comic, wins all the shit comics.
But
which
there
is
were
like a
rules. Do you know what I mean? It's chaos.
You couldn't go Liefeld. We decided that was too easy a win.
Yeah,
anyway.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and the amount of crap we'd find, there's so much out there. I mean, let's face it, Marvel UK wasn't perfect.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, it's something, you know, you think, you know, I found an awful comic. And there's something quite heartbreaking when you see what, like, another person's brought out another one and you think, fuck, that's worse than what I've got.
Yeah. Someone had the Danzig comic. Do you remember that Glenn Danzig comic?
The
that got to the final.
You've got to have an article ready on Rock and Roll Comics, haven't you, surely? Come in.
Yeah, I was picking up stuff. I've actually stopped buying shitty comics because I just keep them, and I was like, I'm not reading
these.
That's
not true. You put a video up today of a haul of comics.
I'm sorry. There's nothing bad in that stack. There's not a single bad comic.
I will make you right on that, my friend. Yeah, definitely. I'll send you a message saying I'm well jealous that you managed to buy a shitload of comics. How did you manage that? Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
sorry,
I lost my.
You were saying stopped buying comics,
I had to stop buying them because it was just like filling up my long boxes, and like, you know, I live. It'd be different if I like owned a home, but like I live in an apartment, and I just think about like I have to move all this shit one day, and it's gonna just be fucking heavy, and you know, I just cleared date during quarantine one day and got rid of probably at least a short box worth of just garbage. But there are things that people would think are shitty that I really like. Like, you know, I think Life Brigade is still like one of the most amazing looking.
Oh, man, you're speaking to the man who just bought all the issues of Femme Force. So, yeah.
There we go.
I'm completely on side with you, my friend. Phasers is another good one. I'd like to recommend that to you if you know that one. Phasers.
I've not heard of that.
Oh, yes. That's one.
But
that's
comics,
the one with the big metal knob on the cover.
Comics are very much like, it's like movies as well, you know, a lot of these comics I find it much akin to, I find some of the nicest Blu-rays you get are like done by Arrow Video, for instance, who take like the real obscure exploitation movies and they show them love, you know, more love than a big studio does for any of their films when they've got more of a budget. And comics has that same sort of feel as well. You know, there's the real underground. No, well, some people may do, but no one goes out to make a shit comic.
No,
you know,
even when
shit.
They do, it's kind of ironic, isn't it? It's done with a little bit of satire.
Yeah. I mean, there are the ones that are tongue in cheek, sort of like this is awful, bask in its glory. But you know, you got to think for all these ones that are like, yeah, this is terrible. There was someone doing what we've all been doing, like, you know, like over a drawing board, over a typewriter, over a word processor, just trying to work on this opus.
Coming up very short.
Yeah.
The only problem with that now, they don't get printed. They all seem to sit in the area of web comics now.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of very good web comics, I might add. Vanguard, obviously, but there's some pretty poor ones out there as well. I think everyone will agree.
Yeah.
And it was a lot cheaper to print back then because, like, you know, there's comics that I'll find, like, they'll literally be like printed from Connecticut, but then I'll see people in like Nebraska that were able to pick them up, and it's like they at least sold 6,000 copies of this garbage.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yeah. Marvel would be praying for those figures on some of their books now.
Exactly.
And I think as well to run on that parallel as well, Vince, is same with bad movies. There's no matter. I mean, I don't know what you're like, Eddie, but we talk about comics every single day. It's all we think about on this podcast. You know, we're constant, and there's still comics that we have never seen, and it's the same as movies. There's always be a horror movie. You think I've never fucking heard of that one.
Yeah.
You know, and comics are the same. There's always something there to surprise you.
Yeah.
And are you guys familiar with Vinegar Syndrome?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they do this sort of slightly sleazy movies, don't they? Yeah, I like this.
Yeah. They're like based out of like 25 minutes from where I live, and they actually have a storefront called the Archive, and it's full of just the shit. Like, you know, in they like it because that's their deal, but like it's full of like just shitty B horror. But it is like it's Arrow films, it's Vinegar Syndrome, wow. And it's all really really crazy things. And like it's really fascinating that one that place is able to exist, and two, like there's enough of these movies to stock the shelves pretty well.
Yeah. There's a real market for those people that like, you know, just love the cheap, like no budget, over the top gore, you know, madness.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to think that there's a market for it in comics as well. But whereas like someone like Vinegar Syndrome would say, God, do you remember this one, like Beach Bastards of the Nuclear Holocaust? I love this. And then they find like the director and they buy the print and then they make it nice for the Blu-ray and stuff. Is there someone in the world that's going to be like, I remember that awful comic.
Oh, do you remember Air Cell Comics or something like that?
Let's find all their comics and then like buy them and reprint them and stuff. And like, you know, I mean, the problem with that is the readership, isn't it, really? I suppose
for me, the way to do that was if they put like a bundle of like 100 pages or, you know, whatever, you know, comics on like a Rock and Roll Comics. If someone put that on Comixology, you know, here's a you know, a trade paperback of 200 pages of Rock and Roll Comics, I'd be all over it.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Aerosol and like reprinting that stuff because is it Outland Entertainment? They're a UK brand, but you know, they did that big Warlock 5 like omnibus reprint on Kickstarter. Like that thing looks gorgeous, but I feel like a lot of that stuff, like, you know, as people have probably tried to reprint it over the years, but like I bet you those creators don't have those files, like, you know, they realized shit and then probably got rid of them or sold them.
Yeah,
I think you're right. And there's some stuff that we don't see anymore. I know Kamiko are famously quite litigious about, they won't let go of, what's that favorite one of yours, Dan, the sex special?
Oh, Elementals.
Yeah, they won't let go of Elementals because they fell out with Bill Willingham. And I think there's probably a bit of that going on, isn't there? You know, sort of strange deals signed. Yeah. But you're part of your original content as well. So you've signed up quite a few comics, haven't you, to your, including our buddy Adam Fout. So Jungle Land Jungle Land by him is an ongoing, isn't it?
So, you know, it started off with the second issue. I originally was like, you know, I don't want to print like people's, like, I don't want to reprint just like stuff from magazines and like steal people's work. So I kind of wanted to start doing bootlegs. I was really fascinated with like Josh Simmons doing, you know, those Batman bootlegs he did a couple years ago. I've been talking to Jasper for a little bit and I was like, what if you did one? And he was like, I want to do Daredevil, and like sent me a concept.
That's nuts. Yeah. That's the Power Man and Iron Fist thing you've got.
That kind of just pushed things over the edge. I feel like as everyone, well, you know, he's super popular and like he's really buzzy, and that kind of, you know, brought a lot of new readers in, but also like that story is just like so damn good. And then after that, I wanted to start doing originals, and Adam and I had been talking about doing something, and he was like, what if we did something over a few different issues? And that was the first time anyone had brought that up to me, and I was really down for that. And, you know, I like that through line of like people wanting, you know, getting something from each issue that, you know, they have to buy the next one to see how it goes. So there is going to be more of that, but I'm happy.
He's made it purposely like free and easy in the narrative structure, isn't it? It's kind of, imagine it's a bit like something like Bronx Warriors. It's got that sort of crazy, sort of violence to it and stuff. Yeah, it's good. But there's some other stuff that I was going to ask you about. Is the Adam Yater strip? Is it A Nork's Tale? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
Man, that's Jim Woodring. Good, that is. What's that about? That's brilliant.
It's funny because I actually haven't really talked to Adam since we did the issue. But I think he saw me on Kayfabe. I'm unsure.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, he followed me and then just reached out. He's like, you know, I've got all these strips. Like, I can send, he's like, how many pages do you want to fill? And I was like, and at the time, I just was like, you know, I think, is it a two page or a four page? I can't remember. But, you know, I gave him a page count and he sent me this really beautiful, like, you know, silent comic. And his work's really good. And it's a shame that one we haven't talked to him. You know, I could easily reach out to him, but I'm really glad that he was in there, and you know, I'm still very proud of that issue. It's probably my favorite to date.
Yeah, that's a lovely strip, man. It really is, and it suits the black and white, same as Woodring suits the black and white. It's really transformative and a little bit transgressive, I suppose, isn't it? It's got that strangeness to it. It really has. The other one I liked is, I liked a number of them, but Flame Ape by Gregory Giordino. That's fucking nuts good. That's like Marfood standard, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, and he was the last person to send those pages in, and you know it was kind of down to the wire, and I was a little nervous. We might have had to cut bait on him, but he was like, give me some like midnight on like the day before print, and I was like, all right, like dude, like I'll wait. Well, thank God I waited. Like they came out awesome, and I think he reached out to me for the first time in a while because I hadn't talked to him since we were working on issue two either, and. He sent me his link tree, and there was an ash can for like a full release of Flame Ape. So I haven't read it yet, but I believe he sent me a physical copy as well.
Oh wow, okay. Oh, I'd like to see that, man. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I might reach out to him about that. Yeah, no, that's really good. And the other one I was going to mention is he's a friend of ours actually, because we review his books quite regularly, and I've reviewed them on sites as well, as Lucas Kowalczak, who did the Destroyer Duck strip.
Oh yeah,
which is fucking mental. Yeah,
Lucas is great. It's funny too, because he actually this is the only thing that time this has ever worked. But when I very very first started Strangers, this like horror zine from Texas reached out, and they're like, "Hey, like, you know, do you want to put a little plug in the back of my magazine?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, like, you know, why not?" And then I get an email like a couple months later from Lucas, and he was like, "Hey, you know, I did the cover for the zine. Like, I figured this might be something that would be good for me." And he's like, "Here's my artwork." And he's like, I was like, look, I'm either doing bootlegs or I'm doing originals. I'm probably leaning more towards bootlegs. And that's when he pitched me on Destroyer Duck. And I will admit, I actually didn't realize it was a Kirby piece. I actually thought it was original.
Well, it's a Kirby piece that speaks out against bad pay and bad treatment, doesn't it? And so it's kind of right that you do that with it, I think, almost.
Exactly. And it was, so I didn't know it was, wasn't Lucas's character for probably until I read it. And then it's funny, in that stack of comics, I just bought a couple of Destroyer Duck issues to familiarize myself. But
it's great. It's a great series, man. And does anyone know what the backup strip was in issue one for Destroyer Duck? It was the first appearance of, anyone know?
No.
Groot.
You got me there. Really?
Yeah, Groot. Oh. It's his first appearance. Yeah.
So that's why that wasn't in the collar, man.
Yeah, that would be the reason. And the other thing you do is, so for people who are listening at home, it's all black and white. So it's got that DIY look to it. It has. And that's part of the appeal, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. It's also, you know, print's really expensive and I'm doing this out of my own pocket. So.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah. And the other thing you do, so you do also do interviews, and you've grabbed some really great names, man. I mean, let's quote Jeff Darrow, Josh Bayer, Richard Corbin. There's some hell of a fucking interview.
Yeah.
Corbin was, I'm still in shock that, you know, he answered me. Most of the time they are, you know, I'm just kind of shooting interviews and like shooting out emails in the dark, like kind of like, hey, here's my magazine, here's what I'm doing. Darrow was the only one where I had a colleague that was friends with him, and he introduced me, but everyone else has been just kind of like blind shots in the dark. You know, I reached out to Corbin. I was talking to my friends. I was like, I did this. Like, you know, I'm probably never going to hear back from him. I've shot a few different people notes about interviews and I've not heard back. So when I got a response, I was like, oh my God, like, holy shit. It was a complete shock. But, you know, in that interview, and I don't mind talking about it now, but like that issue was supposed to be Corbin and Galassi. And back and forth for a while. But he just, I'm not really sure what's going on. I think he's a little bit older and was just kind of having a hard time like seeing the questions. And we kind of just played a lot of like who's on first almost. And eventually I just had the interview, but, I still can't believe like I got him. Like it's like really insane to me.
Yeah. I think, Galassi's retired, isn't he now?
Yeah. And I know he's got a little bit, you know, he can't draw as well as he did. So I think he's got something his hands. So, you know, as much as I would have loved to have him, I think just that issue three, Bayer and Corbin was really strong. And, you know, Bayer was another one of David's interviews. And, you know, I don't mind talking about this in here because I'm probably going to announce it tomorrow anyway, but the next issue 5, in issue 4, he's interviewing Hyena Hell, who's Byers' partner and also does, you know, a lot of great indie work as well.
Nice.
She did No Romance in Hell, and then she's got her like their autobio strip.
Yeah, Byers is a great creator. I think he's not as well known over here. He's in the States. He's quite busy and active, but I don't think people see him enough over here. But he's got a really loose style, but he's extremely clever. I really like his stuff. I got turned on to him by Vince B at 11 O'Clock Comics. I know he's a big fan of him. He promotes him quite a lot, I think. Really good. Yeah. Anything else coming up? Any other little nuggets you can drop our way?
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. They're all gonna get announced. So, I announced Matt Leskaminski. I think I got that right. I'm not gonna say it wrong. David's doing the interview with Hyena Hell. This is actually really exciting. So, do you know like the Coates brothers? They do. Oh my god, I'm gonna blank on the name of it. It's they do like this really crazy like dinosaur fantasy comic.
I'll have to look.
I'm really bad. Okay. Forgetting the name, but he had posted online that he connected with Ragni Ness,
right.
Like Damlog and Barbarian Tales. And, you know, I was like, I originally reached out to him because I was kind of curious about commission rates. And then he was like, hey, if you want, like, I might be able to interview him for Strangers. And it turns out it's his first ever English interview. And like 3 interviews he's ever done. So the first English interview with Ragni Ness is going to be in Strangers 4.
Nice point, man.
Yeah. And then, sorry.
No, let's go, man. You carry on.
And the final interview is, I sat down with Keenan Marshall Keller and Tom Neely, and we just chatted about the next volume of The Humans. So there's some cool preview cover reveal as well, maybe for the first issue. Right before you called me, I was finishing up like the editing for that interview.
Real. Now, for those who haven't read The Humans, Sarah Harris turned me onto this book. Actually, it's great. It's if apes were a biker gang, that's kind of where it sits, isn't it?
Amazing.
It's
super nuts. It's like Sons of Anarchy, but they're all apes.
I think it's the perfect comic. Like, full stop. Like, it's just everything about it is just great. It's super violent. I grew up loving Planet of the Apes, and like I said, like a bit of a biker culture. So it's really for me. It's there's nothing better.
Yeah. This is really good. Yeah, I love that. I think there's a trade out. The first arc is a trade, I think, you can get at the moment, isn't there?
There's 2 of them.
Oh, is there? 2? Okay. Yeah. Right. I must grab the second one. Yeah. Yeah. Now, also, let's talk about how did you find distributing it? Obviously, kayfabe, we got the kayfabe effect on our comic, but did you find that the kayfabe effect really helped with distribution and getting your name out there and stuff?
I think it did a little bit. When they were doing those mailbag episodes, I kind of fell off from the channel just because I think I don't like the direction they went with it, but I really liked when they were doing the mailbag because it was kind of, I would sit there and be like, oh, wow, I like this person's comic, follow them on Instagram. I'm pretty sure that's how I found you guys.
Yeah, it might be, yeah. Yeah.
And they stopped doing that now.
They're not doing it. The videos have been taken down. I'm not sure why. I don't know if someone reacted badly to something they said. You know how the internet is these days. But yeah, you can't find them at the moment. I unfortunately took a screenshot of them looking at our comics. I was so excited. Yeah, yeah. It's extremely popular, kayfabe. We've mentioned it a few times, haven't we, guys? And they do shift comics. So if they review a lot of old comics. So if they review a comic, an old comic, you try and find it on eBay, and if you do, it'd be much more expensive by the time you get there. And they call it the kayfabe effect. That's how it works with them. Yeah.
Wow.
My recommendation is don't buy it on eBay because every one of those books they've talked about, I've found for $1 or less. Just wait like a little bit, and you'll be able to find it. It's one of my frustrations there.
Yeah.
Also that's part of the fun, isn't it? Discovering, you know, when you're in a comic and discovering comics.
We're kind of a bit of a tricky situation now with the old lockdown stuff. But if you can go to a comic mart, you can kind of maybe dig these things out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had that. We have a thing over here, Eddie, it's called a comic mart, and it's like a comic convention without any guests and any cosplayers, and it's just a lot of old blokes who look a bit like me going through long boxes.
Sometimes without any hygiene.
Yeah, there's a lacking of hygiene a lot of time. There's occasionally somebody who just collects sliders, trading cards or something, you know, sitting there just ripping open file. Yeah, it's just it's quite a strange one. There's a few bootleg DVD stalls, and that's about it. But it's great for cheap comics. We go along, we brought a bit along a few times, guys, and we just filled rucksacks and went back on the bus home.
I think Adam told me about that. He said there's always some guy in the back that has like all the weird, like, you know, weird stuff you want to have.
Yeah, big shout out to Bob. Bob is Old Git on eBay, and he has.
Is that his name? Is that listening?
That's his eBay name. Yeah, Old Git. I was speaking to David Hine about it, and we were saying like he's got the best stuff. I've just bought two more things from him today. Yeah, he has all the weird stuff that you just don't see anywhere else, including issues of Weirdo and, you know, this sort of thing. It's just fantastic. And whenever you get any comics from him, the backing board to the cardboard in the envelope is always from a box of wine. So I don't know how much wine he gets, but it's always
brilliant.
Yeah, love the dude. Me and Adam were quite obsessed with him. We just want to be friends with him and go around his house and have a look at his, you know, collection. It's always Eros comics and all this sort of thing. Yeah, it's really good stuff. Yeah, no, and we love that, man. I think that side of comics is much forgotten. I think we spend our lives, certainly us on this podcast, complaining about the price of some comics. But you go along to a comic mart and you'll fill your rucksack for a fiver.
Yeah, get loads of them.
Yeah. And that's where you're trying to go. What's that, mate?
Sorry. I say it's unfortunate because, like, you know, the $3.99 comic that you buy on the shelf, like a month later, it's worth about $1. Mm. And it's really a weird market to be in right now.
Yeah. What sort of stuff are you really digging at the moment? Is anything that has come across your radar? Because you're very much on that outlaw side of things. And, you know, there's stuff you talk about I've never heard of. You know, I'd really like to hear.
So it's weird. I've been in a weird spot like the past like 6 or 7 months. I've almost fully started only reading manga as of late. Right. You know, it was a bit of a blind spot for me. And I kind of was like, you know, I'm just going to start. And I put like a ask out on my Instagram. I was like, hey, like, what do people recommend? And I got flooded with like a really amazing
recommendation. Dude, that's a deep pool. When we said before, what should we start with? Oh, you should start with this one. And then you realize there's about 76 volumes and they're all about 120 pages each.
I did it about a year ago. Do you remember? And I'm still reading the first volume they recommended to me.
Yeah. And it's all great stuff. This is all great.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's been a lot of it, is just like, you know, picking up old manga and picking up like kind of a lot of the stuff that Drawn in Quarterly and, you know, this is publisher that's called Black Hook Press, and they do a lot of these like Gekiga titles that I've been really fascinated with. So that's really been the last 6 or 7 months of my life, is just like, just nothing but manga. And then between that, you know, I'll be reading the stuff from the Mail Call reviews that I do for each issue. You know, I just picked up Rodeo from Evan Salazar, which, you know, I'm a huge fan of Evan's work. And I was pleased in the very back of it, there was a little thank you note for About Strangers, which is cool. And, you know, I'm literally looking at the original art for the back cover of Strangers 3, which he did. And, you know, Josh Pettinger, who's a UK transplant to America, his like one-man anthology, Goiter, is just amazing.
Good. I mean, this is a side of things. That's the thing. There's so many sides to comics we don't hear about, and manga's one. And this sort of this underground stuff that you're dealing with, there's a lot of stuff there that we just don't hear about in the UK. And I suppose you also don't hear about a lot of our small press because it's so DIY over here. That's the thing, you know. And more people should hear about people like Lucas and people like Falpi, and you know, more people should be hearing about his stuff. Because I think you're right. If this was 1989, these books would be selling thousands and thousands of copies.
That was one of the things I wanted to. You know, I started doing this little distro on top of doing Strangers. And you know, you guys know about it. You were the first title, Atomic Hercules. And kind of the point of that was just like, you know, I fell in love with Atomic Hercules. I fell in love with Cosmic Slop, which is Jordan Barry Brown. He's out of Ireland. And I just wanted I wanted more of these people to know these books. And I knew they were right for my audience. You know, I'm well aware of what my readers enjoy. And, you know, I think it was perfect proof. You know, we sold out of Atomic Hercules in a day. Like every copy you sent me went within 8 hours.
And then, well, that's what I was going to speak to you about next, because I know we've talked about sending you some more and we've got the next issue coming your way. But is that something you're going to grow? And like, everyone, do not send an email immediately, or send 100 issues of your comic.
Yeah, and also there's the value of knowing your audience. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There's, yeah. You know, you have to know what pool you're swimming in. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you're doing a Saturday morning kids cartoon superhero comic, this might not be, but you know, it's not going to sit next to Atomic Hercules.
Yeah. Or sit next to Josh Bayer or someone like that. Yeah. But is that's something you're sort of, is it you're sort of growing it organically, I'm guessing, because I know you've just added another title, haven't you? So is that the plan?
Yeah. So the approach I wanted to take with it, I want it to be super, super curated. Like, if you see it in my web shop, you know it's something that I really enjoy, I would spend my money on, and which is the case. Right. I've backed Comic Hercules. I just bought the new copy to do with Cosmic Slop. Like, you know, I was willing to pay like UK shipping to get these books.
Oh, wow.
And if it's in my shop, it's something that I, you know, 100% support. So it is something I'm growing. You know, I like I mentioned Rodeo before, I picked up a couple of the issues to sell when I released Strangers 4. Cosmic Slop is coming as well when the second issue comes. And then I'm working with Rome Comics out of Australia to bring his book, which is called Fortress, over as well. And that's another really, like, you know, it's like kind of a sci-fi book that I'm really digging, and I wanted to kind of give some more attention. So a lot of it is going to be focusing on titles that are a little more, you know, not difficult, but like just, it would be more expensive to get them shipped to the US. So I want to give them a little bit of a better distribution. And then there's going to be titles as well. Like I said, I picked up Rodeo, and I think that was the first of them. And then I'm probably forgetting a couple that I've talked to and, you know, that I'm trying to put in there as well. But then, you know, I still want to help people out, and I still want to help, you know, foreign creators get some more access in the States. So it hasn't really started yet, but like I am working on trying to do some like back end fulfillment for people. You know, yeah. It wouldn't be a stranger's shop, but like, you know, you'd send me your books and you could sell them through your site, but like, you know, you don't have to charge $13 for shipping. You can charge $2 for shipping because I'm able to send it from Connecticut. So that's something I'm still kind of toying with. I've talked to a few people about it. But you know,
that's the way it's going. That's the value of contacts, isn't it, these days? Because with the nightmare that we hear about, like almost weekly now, about different Kickstarters charging, you know, three times the price of the book at the moment. It's going to be a valued thing, man. I think having that, which is what you are, a stateside distributor for some books that you like from the UK or France or, you know, wherever it's going to be, Ireland, you know, so that's how it's hopefully will work for you. But like you say, you are curated, and I know what our listeners are like, and they're very nice people, our listeners, but don't just send him 100 copies of your cat zine. You know what I mean?
I know, that's a mistake I put for putting my address in YouTube.
So with the oncoming, let's fingers crossed, touch wood, hope it's going to happen, with the oncoming arrival back of conventions in the States, are you going to start doing them for strangers, or is that the plan?
Yeah.
Where would
the plan,
be a good one,
you know, I wanted to start with, I mean, even when I started applying for shows back in, you know, before we knew that everything was going to be shut down for the whole year, I did start applying to a couple. I think I applied to like Comics Crossroads and maybe SPX. I don't remember. Okay. Yeah. But you know, I think I only had one issue out, and I was like, oh, like, you know, by the time the show is going to go, I'll have three issues, which is, you know, I'm kind of just promising that I would get the work done. But, you know, when conventions do eventually come back, I feel like I'm in a nice place. You know, I'll have probably six issues of the magazine. We're going to have at least four issues out of, like, you know, the publishing line that I've started as well. So I'll have a nice amount of things to kind of justify being there. And, you know, I want to do SPX. I really want to do Comic Arts Brooklyn. That was kind of like, you know, the final push to get this thing started. And then I've been with my friend that runs a zine. I mentioned before, Dead at Birth, but we talked about doing our own zine fest in New Haven, which is where we're from. And I connected with one of the artists out here that runs like kind of a, you know, art collective, and we were talking about using their space, and she was really interested in it. So, you know, those are some grand plans. We'll see if anything actually ends up happening. But, you know, I'd love to run my own show. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I now, you know, I have the connections, and I know a bunch of people that would want to come over for it. So,
yeah, Oh, that's good news, man. I mean, I know Adam and I, as long as it happens, have got a table at Heroes this year. Adam booked it from last year, so I'm hopping on board.
Oh, wow.
And when we'd love to carry your book on that table, man. I think it's a perfect fit for us. Yeah,
please. So, I'd love to be a hero. So.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. The other thing I was going to ask you about is advertising. So I know you do put out shouts for people to advertise their small press and underground comics in the back of yours as well now, don't you?
I started a little bit.
Right.
I did one. I did the first advertisement in issue 3 with Gutter Pop. And, you know, we did a barter deal and I was like, hey, like, you know, I'll run a full page ad for you. Like, why don't you just send me some store credit?
Right.
So I got some store credit from them and picked up a couple of things. And then for issue 4, I've got a few more ads. I want to eventually open it up to people that can pay for advertising or that want to pay for advertising. I don't know what's holding me back from doing, because I know people would be interested. I know my distribution is big enough where it would be worthwhile for people. I'll start. You know, what I've been doing is I do this mail call review section, and you know, anybody that wants to send me their book, and you know, like you said, I might be hesitant to say this on air, but you know, anybody that sends me their book, I'll do a little review for it. And it's, you know, it ends up being about 30 comics an issue. A lot of it, it's a mixture of stuff that I have bought and then stuff that is sent to me.
Yeah.
That ends up being a little bit of an advertisement, but also it's just like, you know, it's a nice thing to do for like the community. You know, a lot of these, like, there's not a lot of comic review sites, and there's not a lot of comic review sites that are going to review small press in any sort of meaningful way. So it was just something I wanted to keep up and kind of my way of giving back for people that are supporting me. And
I love that section, man. That's one of my favorite bits. Yeah, it's really good. And that's, you gave a lovely review to our book, but there's also next to it is something by Noah Van Sciver and, like you say, Celery Stick 7. And there's some really great stuff in there, man. To me, I go straight to it, and there'll be books off there I'll definitely be buying.
I think it's important to sort of say as well, obviously this is a UK show, and we've seen the UK community of comics is, obviously it doesn't take long before everyone knows everyone else, and like, you know, we all know each other, and like, there, as well as us, there's other people shouting about small press and stuff. But elsewhere in the world, it's a completely different kettle of fish. It's completely different. You know, the small press and indie scene in the States, I mean, that's obviously it's an enormous country, and it's so much, it can be so difficult.
We're actually a little bit insular here, aren't we? We're at the UK press, small press scene is, you're right, and we're not aware of the other countries that do it.
So if you're doing those books that are like, you know, there's a lot of creators, obviously, the indie scene's doing well in the States, and you have like the Kickstarter successes, etc. But what about, you know, those self-published, printed at home kind of books, you know, where is their home? Where can they get the shout outs? Which is why the work that you're doing is so important.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's almost like you're the magazine. You're a little bit like the magazine equivalent of what we try and do, I think, in a way, in different continents, you know?
Exactly. Like, you want to give, you know, you want to give love to these people. And a lot of the stuff I get, like, it's printed on their computer paper.
Right.
But, you know, it's stuff that they're doing from home, and I'll get a nice little note from people and that they include in their work. And like, I got one from a creator in Chicago. I can't remember his real name. His Instagram's Fanny D. White. And he was like, he's like, I hate my day job. Like, I don't do anything with art, but like, I wanted to send you these comics to review. And it is just a way, you know, to give them a little bit of extra exposure. And I think outside of what myself and Brian do with Bubbles, you know, there's a couple websites that do it. You know, Four Color Apocalypse is really great for it, and every once in a while you'll see some smaller write-ups in TCJ, but
yeah,
it isn't that kind of thing in the States, especially in any written or especially any sort of physical way.
I actually think the Comics Journal is becoming more aware of the small press. I know they reviewed an Avery Hill book in the last round, which years ago you wouldn't have found them doing because it would have been too small fry for them. But I think they're becoming aware of that scene, because whilst we don't make huge amounts of sales, it is a very popular movement. I think these days it's gaining ground, isn't it?
Yeah, it's filled with people that, and on the first note with TCJ getting a little more familiar with it, I think that has to do a lot with the people that are now writing for TCJ. Okay. Are the small press people. You know, Katie Skelly does a lot of writing for there, or used to, but Josh Byard is writing for there, and you know, they're in tune with the scene because they came up in that scene. So they're going to write about their friends, and they're going to write about these cool books that, you know, a lot of people that might not be aware of them. That's pretty much it. It's just like, yeah, like, you know, people are becoming more aware of TCJ, and or like their TCJ is becoming a bit more aware, and it is nice to see it. You know, I want to see more people kind of covering the small press stuff.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, definitely.
Because there's so much out there. There's so, yeah. you know, and there's always something to discover, which is what this show and what you're doing is about.
Even doing the Thought Bubble ones, like I was encountering comics that I've not come across, and I've been into doing like into the small press scene for years. Yeah. So God knows what it's like the rest of the world.
Yeah, there's every day we speak to small press people over here, don't we? Every day, but there's still stuff that surprises us that we haven't seen. Yeah.
The worst part is, you know, a lot of it, like, I'm not even that old. Like, you know, I'm still in my mid to late 20s. But, like, some of the people that reach out to me, like, this kid, Nate Garcia, he does this book called Horn Rim. And he's like, oh, I'm 18 years old. Amazing. And it's wild, some of the talent that's coming up. And, like, for how young they are. And you're like, wait for you to be, like, 7 years older. Like, you're going to be, like, on a different level. And, like, you know, Jack is 20 years old. And he's one of the best people, like he's amazing.
What do you think is fueling this sort of small press resurgence? That's a very hard question.
That is a good question.
I don't know the answer myself.
Well, I think we're seeing more because of lockdown. I think people are stuck there. What can I do with my life? I think I'll do a podcast or a comic. That kinds to be how it is at the moment, isn't it?
You know? Yeah.
I will give Kayfabe some credit. I think they definitely put the fire under a lot of people's asses to start making some cool books. With that community, it kind of breeds more community and breeds offshoots of it. I think a lot of it too is just like, you know, books like comics are now being more, you know, more accessible in schools, and these kids are growing up with these things more in their life, and it's not superhero. You know, they're getting, like, I remember being in school with me and being familiar with Mouse. But, you know, everyone's making comics, and the ones that are most popular now are not, you know, they're not superhero books. They're things from First Second, and then they're things like, you know, from Avery. Yeah. And you know, everyone's like, oh, I can just tell my own story, and I don't have to do the superhero track. So I think maybe that's influencing a lot of it. It's just like kids are growing up realizing that they can tell original stories through sequential art.
Yeah, it does. It says a lot when... most people say comics, and probably the wider world go, well, superheroes. And I think for some creators, they think, you know, before they even start, they think, oh, well, you know, I don't want to do superheroes. I don't want to do that kind of stuff. And then when they see something that isn't that, then that just lights a fire, doesn't it? That's totally like,
Definitely changing in my lifetime. This week, my son and all these kids at school, they're reading like manga. I said, I've got some books. And he went, no superhero stuff. And I was like, oh, no, okay. And then I had some One Punch Man and My Hero Academia and some Star Wars manga. And I sort of sent him into school with that. And
he's so proud.
Yeah, there's going to be it's going to change from like, as it's changing in my lifetime, moving from kind of when you think superhero comics, you're thinking synonymous with superheroes in the West, at least. Yeah. It's changing quite rapidly.
Yeah.
And because, like, a lot of those manga series as well, you know, a lot of the times they come with an anime, or they've, you know, there's so many different adaptions that the Japanese are just absolutely churning out to a high quality as well.
But it's really high concept stuff as well. It's really easy to kind of get hooked by the idea, and where you sort of say to one of them, Batman and Superman or whatever, they're kind of like, oh, yeah, kind of been there.
Yeah, we know what that's like. Yeah, yawn.
When he starts saying, oh, this, it's like he's a superhero, can defeat anyone with one punch, or it's a schoolboy who goes to school school for superheroes and stuff like that. And
I will say I haven't read any of it. I need to watch the rest of it. I've only seen the first episode of One Punch Man, and it's fucking hilarious. And
that's
and
good. I've seen
this. I will say to the listeners, I know you're shouting at your iPods or whatever you're listening to
this on. Tony, we were back in 2000.
It's Apple Pods now, Tony. It's Apple Pods. But in 2021, we promise there's going to be a manga episode.
We keep promising it, don't we?
Definitely check it out, Tony. It's a 10-episode series on Netflix, One Punch Man.
It's on Netflix. I can watch that. Yeah.
It's genuinely funny. It's genuinely funny. Which,
right, okay.
Yeah.
It's not that Pokemon shit, is it? It's not like that, is it?
No.
Oh, goodness. You get
punched and blown into pieces. And
that's better. Yeah. I wish that had happened more on Pokemon. What's that?
It's like a very tongue-in-cheek, like, kind of...
Right, okay.
Of other anime.
Yeah.
Good. Good stuff.
And then it will explain, like, when you go to a convention and you see someone dressed up like him and they walk past and you think, what's that?
Yeah, I'm always confused. Remember when we used to know all the cosplayers, what they were meant to be, didn't we? Oh, that's Venom or whatever. I don't know fucking half of them now because it's all manga, isn't it?
I think, Dan, was it last year at MCM when we had our... we had a little competition about cosplay, didn't we? Like the most random one. And did one of us say One Punch Man? Like thinking we'd never see it, and then someone
turned
up.
I do recognise there's the people dressed up in the costumes from Attack on Titan.
Oh, there's not many of them, is there?
There was loads of them. Every show, there's loads of them.
It's like you never see a Deadpool cosplayer, do you? That never happens anymore.
Yeah. That's coming.
Harley Quinn overtook him, didn't he?
Sorry,
Harley Quinn.
Were you guys at MCM London a couple years ago? I think it was.
I would have been.
2019. Oh god.
19. So the 1 year, I was over there was the year that Critical Role was there, and that's like that gigantic, massive D&D podcast. Mm. And
Vince knows nothing about that.
It's wild.
Yeah,
they love that stuff.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with that.
That was the week. That was the weekend that everyone in Artist Alley was drawing Dungeons and Dragons characters for people.
Yeah,
isn't it? Yeah, we were meant to be doing the next couple of MCMs, but lockdown ruined it. But yeah, well, I do it for Nobrow generally.
Yeah.
So,
You know. That's why things like Stranger Zines is so important, you know, because comics are still out there and they're still living and breathing and people are still making them, sometimes to just help them get through the day.
Yeah, we poo-poo the popular big industry stuff as comic fans now, I think, don't we? We like the more dangerous, edgy, you know, stuff in the hinterlands, and Strangers has got an edge to it, which I think is really appeals to certainly us three, doesn't it? And I know others. Yeah, it's exactly what you want.
How many times have we come across people who kind of come across small press comics and then before you know it, they're making one of their own?
Yeah.
It's really kind of infectious. So
everyone's got a podcast and everyone's making a comic. That's how it works in the UK. I think you find, Eddie. I mean, just speak to random people on the bus. They'll be doing a fanzine or a little zine about their cat or something.
I feel like a little bit of a fraud because I don't have any drawing abilities. So I'm just, you know, supporting how I can.
That doesn't stop many people.
I knew you were going to say that.
At least we can admit it, Eddie.
Yeah. But you are, you're fighting the fight for comics, which is why we love you. So, you know.
The best I can.
Yeah. And, like, certainly, indie comics are where it's all about, isn't it, really? Because, like, the mainstream is a bit strange. There's one topic, Dan, you wanted to talk. Should we briefly talk about this? Because I haven't watched it, and we're going to talk.
Dan, Dan's got a real bit in his mouth around this, isn't he?
Yeah.
No, I'm absolutely bewildered by it, honestly.
It's something that has been... has it caused ripples a little bit on social media? Everything fucking does, doesn't it? What am I saying?
Well, I just caught an offhand comment this morning. I saw this TV series pop up, and it was the Marvel 616, I think it is, TV series on Disney Plus. And I flicked through the channels, and I saw the first one, and it was like, it's all the different Marvel things from around the world and different snips about like, what Marvel does now, which is more of kind of like a multimedia entertainment company as opposed to a comics company. And the first one was like Japanese Spider-Man. I thought, oh, I'd definitely watch that. I didn't think anything more of it. And then the next day, there were people going on about the Dan Slott one off of the episodes, and it was like episode 4 or 5. And I thought, oh, I'll give this a go because like some of the comments were like a bit vitriolic. And it's basically kind of like it follows Dan Slott around as he starts writing Iron Man 2020 and till the completion of the issue. And I was just kind of shocked at the way he works and the slovenly way he works.
It's slovenly. There's Dan Butcher's word for the week. There you go.
Yeah. Slovenly. Yeah. It's almost like they've thought, who can be like the comedy character at Marvel? We can do like this funny documentary. So they do it about Dan Slott not meeting deadlines and having to get other people in to write dialogue. But then But then again, it's not funny either. It's not funny at all.
It's supposed to be what the kind of the angle was that they talk about the Marvel method.
Yeah.
But they used to employ where like Stan Lee would kind of oversee half a dozen titles or whatever, give a brief outline to Jack Kirby, whoever, they'd bang out the issue and then he'd come along and stick a load of words in. And he took a lot more credit for the comics than the artist did, in my opinion. Not taking any away from Stan. But it was the idea that Dan Slott's the only one who still employs this method. And what it kind of boiled down to for me was like he writes a rough outline for the comic, which the artist draws, and then another guy is hired by Marvel because Dan Slott can't make the deadline, who fills in the dialogue.
Who does the script?
That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, well, how would you relinquish creative control to the point where you're not even writing a full script? You're just banging out a plot outline.
But it's not even part of a plan. It's like, oh, he hasn't done it yet, you know. Yeah. And there's all this kickoff on Twitter. If you put Dan Slott into Twitter, it's all people going, well, perhaps you shouldn't tweet so much.
Yeah. He sort of goes into that Norm Breville about like, oh, how are you getting on? And he said, well, I've not done this. And he's like, well, Dan, you're kind of behind. And I don't know if he's kind of like trying to present it as like a comedy thing of like, oh, there's Dan not doing his work on time. But it's not presented in a way like, oh, this is like hyper reality, or it's a nod wink at the camera that, oh, this is all kind of like a bit staged. There's all these kind of like graphic bits where like Dan's sitting in front of a black desk and like you see the script coming up behind him and he's kind of like pretending to fumble and think up of ideas, which is like, okay, I can understand that's a bit of a gag. That's the thing. But is it going into the office and being told you're behind schedule and having to get someone else in to finish up your dialogue? Is that a gag? Is delivering the comic with 2 days to letter before the print deadline, is that a gag? What's the gag? Is that a bit bad on the letterer that he hasn't got a script, a finished script at all, but 2 days before the fucking thing goes to print and just dumped all the pages on it?
Comics.
Yeah.
It's like
the old days of the bullpen when they were forever pulling little tricks and japes on each other. Oh, look, we aren't going to get to print on time of this because the writer can't be bothered to write it. That's not that funny.
What else are you doing, Dan? I mean, like, for instance, I can only relate to my job. If I left my job right to the end, like, one of the things I work on is a magazine goes to press every Friday. If I was like Friday afternoon, I haven't done the majority of my job, they've got to get someone else in to finish it off to get it to press or whatever. How long would I last in that job? Not very long. I was bewildered. And then the fact that it was kind of like endorsed by Marvel and put out on the TV to sort of say, look at this. It's like a 45 minute long program saying, why have you still hiring this man?
I think partly is because the program itself is set up to be one of those sort of entertainment documentaries rather than a straight in, like Belt and Braces, this is how we make comics sort of thing. Because a lot of it, and there's a lot of people out there that we're talking to right now that make their own comics, it's not glamorous.
No,
it's not fucking glamorous. And when you're working for a company that are very much, you need to hit this deadline, that deadline, and that deadline, how many people want a documentary team over their shoulders when they're trying to keep their job?
Yeah.
You could rustle up a, like, if you did a 45, it's a 45 minute long program with about 20 minutes worth of content. And if you wanted to do like, well, we're going to take a comic from beginning to start, and you'd have, how do you come up with the ideas for the comic? How does the writer talk to the artist? How does the artist create the comic to then the lettering? And then you go right at the end, you go to the print press and you see them, how they do the print process, like, and how you chop the pages up and bind it and how it gets sent out. And you did like a 10 minute section on each. That'd easily be fillable.
Yeah. There'd be more content. Not being funny, in the 45 minutes it takes you to watch that documentary, I've got to tell you, Dan Slott, if he put his mind to it, could probably have written a big chunk of that comic.
But here's another thing, which, all right, here's the elephant in the room. The people that are going to watch this program, the Disney Plus audience, they don't want to know. That sounds horrible, but they don't care about the things that we want to see.
I don't know who that episode's for.
Yeah,
if I'm honest.
From the sounds of it, I mean, I am interested to watch it. I don't have Disney Plus, so I'm gonna have to sign up in the
new. Yeah, me neither.
Just watch this.
You can get it free for a month. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I might do that. Probably when the Marvel TV shows get added in.
Yeah, that's my plan. I don't want to miss whatever Vision or whatever it is that comes out. So I'll probably sign up for it then. Yeah.
You know, and naturally, because I'm interested in comics, I'm always interested in these sort of comic book documentaries and all kinds. It's like that Kevin Smith comic book. Is it Comic Book Guys? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Did you ever watch?
I mean, the opportunities they had to do stuff like In Search of Steve Ditko or something like that. Yeah. That was a great documentary.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing is, there's a kind of narrative that the current Marvel artists or creators. I'm not saying this is correct, but they're kind of a bit out of touch with things. They're not really sure kind of what's going on. And then this gets put out, which kind of like just seems a man just, I don't know, drifting through a part of his career. I'm odd. I don't know.
He's active. Is he still active on social media, Dan Slott? He was a lot.
Not too many people.
I can't tell you. I'm blocked.
Yeah.
Me too.
Punchline. Took a while, but we got there. But the thing is, I mean, he'll probably spend the next couple of weeks just talking about, well, I've written Spider-Man for God knows how many years, you know, blah, blah, blah. They do all of that and stuff.
I don't know. Maybe people, if you've got Disney Plus, check out the episode and then give me a bit of feedback in the ACP group and see if I'm reading that right. Because for me, it doesn't come across as like a wink and a nod at the audience saying this is all a bit of a send up.
Yeah.
It just seems very kind of.
We met Slott, didn't we? Do you remember at the last London Super Comic Con? He was nice to us. And I don't know if you remember, his missus came over the table and just started chatting. I said, who are you? And she said, oh, I'm Dan Slott's missus. Yeah. Do you remember?
Yeah. I've got nothing
to probably didn't say in those words.
So nice. Apart from not fucking doing it. But
Although this does give me an idea for a future episode. I think we should definitely do an episode that the topic should be about comic book documentaries.
Some good ones, aren't there?
Because I know, there's loads that we've probably spoken about in the past. There's some classic ones, there's some new ones, there's some all kinds.
That Image one's a banger.
Yeah, the Image one's a banger. The 2000 AD one is fucking great. Awesome.
Yeah.
And there was a classic one that was on late night.
Not the one with Eisner and
it had Crumb and Spain Rodriguez, and there was loads
another one. I think I've got it on VHS still. But there's the Crumb one's a really good one. The movie about Crumb is a really interesting one as well.
So I think that would be fascinating, you know. But genuine comic book documentaries, not that fluff bam pow stuff.
There's a great one on Catherine Jeffrey-Jones, which is the most beautiful. They are one of the most incredible, when they're alive, the most incredible artists, and that'll break your heart, man. That's a really sad one. Good.
Save all those links for when we do that show.
I just watched that one on Matt Fury, that Feels Good Man. That was like unbelievable. Like how it was all bringing Pepe back from like an alt-right,
I wanted to watch this.
So good.
Wow.
Because I've seen that original comic, and it's absolutely nothing to do with. It's just like he urinates with his trousers around his ankles.
Yeah.
And I say, why do you do that? And he said, oh, it feels good, man.
Yeah, we
and
all.
Like, they mapped like, the whole wrong. Trajectory of it. And it literally went from like, they said it went from that page of like him, you know, peeing with his pants around his ankles to it appearing on a workout forum about like, oh, like just had a great workout, feels good, man. And then literally from a workout forum went to 4chan, it's insane. Like the whole thing is just like, you can't believe that this is like the trajectory of how this thing became.
And now it's all over like the Boogaloo Boys and InfoWars and all that sort of thing, isn't it now? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, how the fuck do you even claim that back? I guess watch a documentary.
Bad one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a great one on Netflix. It might be on Prime actually, about Mike Diana, which is about his trial.
That's great.
I'm not sure.
That's
a very good one. Is the Steve Rude one still on Amazon? That was
not sure.
I think so.
That was a fascinating. That was
really
a fascinating,
sad one, wasn't it?
Very fascinating one. They're all out there. Just search for them.
Comics Britannia is another good one for the English, the British crowd. There's the first and the last episodes of that you can find on YouTube.
Someone put a playlist together on YouTube of all the comic documentaries that are on YouTube. So that's somewhere. I'm sure if you like, you know, if you look for one, it'll kind of lead you to the playlist.
You get a playlist.
That's my weekend.
Yeah, that's good.
Lovely. So, yes, and what a fantastic chat this has been so far. Thank you very much, Eddie, for all that.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers, dude.
Great indie knowledge.
Yeah, that's good, man. Yeah, stay with us, though.
Yeah. He's going to stick with us for the rest of the show, where in about 10 minutes, it's going to probably get a bit mental. It normally does towards the end. It's just carnage, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's at the point where I realise that the brakes don't work and I can't stop the car. But until then, we have the shout-outs. What shout-outs do we have, gents?
Yeah, I got a few. So our friend from Digitopia, he's reached out. He's Digitopia 1 and 2, which I know have been kickstarted. It's almost complete now. And he's also running a short-run Indiegogo. So I think there's people who look at Indiegogo and don't look at Kickstarter. I think I'm right in saying that. We had a bit of a conversation on the ACB forum about it, and I think it hits. It's not always that subgroup, but it does hit other people who don't always see on Kickstarter. So he's running a short run thing. So have a look for Digitopia if you are an Indiegogo user, and otherwise it should be out quite soon. It's all complete as far as I know. Congratulations to Durf Bakdurf on his official selection at 2021 on Gun. Obviously, that's completely and utterly down to us. So for pushing his book so much.
I really hope he can go to that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Watch this space for where else he might be appearing. Nobrow's Alexander Utkin is also on the selection for Gamian Tales, which we're really pleased about. And it's been published in France by Gallimard, which is very exciting, who bought me dinner this year at Angoulême. So it's obviously I've sorted that out as well. I got my personalised copy of The Hum from Gareth Hopkins, another great combination of art and comics, which is I recommend. I know it's a short run, but always keep your eye out on Gareth's Twitter feed because he always announces a short run of a comic, the next comic he's doing, and he does put a lot of work out. And this one is especially lovely, absolutely beautiful, really good. And my last one is Atomic Hercules 2 is now in Comixology. So get over to Comixology if you haven't bought it before. You can read it on Guided View. Actually, it reads quite well on Guided View. Actually, there's a few surprises that happen, as we all know, with a unicorn, and it works quite well when you press the next page button on Guided View. And Herc 3 is still up for pre-order around atomichercules.com. You can pre-order. We are in the last stages of it, and they'll be off to the printer very soon. There you go. They're mine.
Fantastic.
Nice. Dan, do you have any shout-outs?
I briefly mentioned El Marvo 2 earlier. So I'll quickly
check out now.
Go check that out. Bet that. Yeah. Good stuff.
Get behind that.
I will just put a quick shout out for Lise Richardson at Lise Richardson on Twitter. Big fan of her.
We know her from BAM, don't we?
I've got a few of her books, and we've also got a calendar, which is delightful. Absolutely delightful. But I noticed this recently. Check out her Patreon because she's doing these like sort of hauntings comics and stuff which have been really nice. It's sort of like 4-page sort of walking the dog, but you know, you think something, you know, when you walk the dog at night and then you sort of think, is there something behind me, something a little bit creepy, stuff like that. They're really cool. But I did notice recently on Twitter that she's looking to get them printed as a collection, but she's thinking about like she's looking for tips or like spot UV finish or foil or whatever and recommendations and stuff. So get in touch with Lise Richardson if you know about stuff like that, because I want that book. It's as simple as that. She posted it on the 17th of November, and I thought I really must remember to bring that up because it's great stuff. And she does like watercolor Patreon videos and stuff as well, so you can she does loads of art stuff and streams and stuff on the Patreon.
Did you have any shout outs, Eddie?
Oh yes, Eddie.
Yeah, I got a couple. First off, you know, Keenan Marshall Keller's kickstarting his new book, it's his collection of Scumbag for Hire. They hit their goal, which is really great, but I think they have, you know, like 20 days left. There's like a, you know, there's a stretch goal and everything for there. I'm really looking forward to that coming in. Nice. And then you know, my buddy Corey Corcoran, I think his last name is. He's got a new copy of Screezine coming out with like a really wild cast of interviews. You know, he interviews like Bat and Spider, Tim Goodyear, Josh Simmons, and this one's all about like psycho, not horror films. The last one he did was about Garfield, which I was a contributor to as well. And then my buddy David Moses, he's got a new mini out through Holy Mountain Printing that comes. I think you can get it on its own, but it also comes if you pick up that new book they did, Death Blazers, you get a free copy of it. So yeah, all really good stuff.
Oh, nice. Good stuff, man. I've just backed Scumbag for Hire, as you said it. So there you go.
Yay. Live. Amazing.
There you go. Love it.
That's how it works. That's how it works. It also yeah. works when we recommend some comics to you lovely people. So it's become tradition now on this show that the guest goes first to recommend a comic to you lovely people. Eddie, what would you like to recommend?
Just one?
Two, if you've got a matter.
Yeah, if you got,
I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but, you know, I just read Evan Salazar's Rodeo 2. I'm a huge fan of his work, and it's kind of his anthology that has a story that goes throughout. And I just think he's you know, a fantastic cartoonist, and he's got, like, a really cool style. So, you know, he's got the second issue out. And then the other one I would talk about is probably just a new issue of Goiter, which Josh Pettinger did. You know, he's up to issue 5, and it's amazing how kind of, you know, not unwell known he is. He's getting some recognition, but just how talented the two of them are, and they've both done a book together. But you know, I'm a huge fan of both their works.
Amazing. Good stuff, man.
And five issues.
For people to write down.
Yeah, that's always good when you've got 5 issues, more to get into. Who would like to go next?
You want to go, Dan? Oh, you've got two, Vince.
I'll finish off with a short, sharp one at the end. But first, I will. I've got two books from people I spoke to recently on the Thought Bubble episode.
Fantastic.
And the first was a book from Johanna Ost. Yes, I murdered her name directly to her face when I interviewed her.
In her face.
Even though for the 30 seconds before I set record, I was practicing it, and she was like, don't worry, but it's fine. People get it wrong all the time. But when it came down to it, I fucked it. but her book, Seaside, was one that I picked up from the Thought Bubble. Browse and Buy that I did. And it's wonderful. It's basically, it's a 68-page black and white book. It's a so-called a damp, atmospheric ghost story set in an English seaside town, told mainly through images and minimal dialogue. And it's full of seagulls, delinquents, dogs, carnivals, and underwater mystery. That old classic. but this is just a really lovely book. I read it in one sitting, but it's just wonderful, and it is definitely a ghost story in the truest sense of it, because I find that some of the best ghost stories are all about atmosphere and, like, you know, the classics of M.R. James and things like that. Do you know, it's not necessarily about what you're seeing, it's the mystery and weirdness going on, and nothing's really explained in it, but it's basically about this this girl who turns up at the seaside town picking up an inheritance. She basically inherited a house from her aunt who has passed away, and the strangeness that goes on within there. She's an artist. I think in some ways there's a little bit of I want to say autobiographical, but not in the this is her life kind of thing, but I can definitely see the artist putting a little bit of themselves within the book, you know, much like Stephen King writes about writers, if that makes sense. This is a book about an artist, and just the strength, like, there's the house is creepy, and there's one sort of room, and no matter how many times she cleans it up, it keeps sort of lit. There's water that keeps appearing, and you and there's lots of mystery going on. There's I don't want to give too much away, because that's the beauty of ghost stories, is discovering it. There's like a sort of trendy sort of punkish goth band, and I coined the term. What did I coin the term? Goth. Oh, I've forgotten what it is now. I tell you what. In the chat, I coined a term that I thought was genius. I'll never forget it. And I forgot.
What, in our chat?
No, not in our chat. On episode 280, if you go back and listen to that.
Okay.
But this wonderful story. The artwork, it is beautiful. Inks and watercolor washes and the like. She does have more on her store. My copy also came with an amazing bookmark, which I'm easy to sell to if you just put some bells and whistles. But these bookmarks actually look like coffins with people in them, and the people.
Oh, you showed us this, didn't you? Yeah. Okay.
And the person is kind of representative of something that goes on within the book, which I think is quite cool. So it's on her store, johannaost.com, right now. I think she's more of an Instagram artist than Twitter. And on her star as well, there is The Seagull Vampire King of Whitby, which looks cool as well. This book is a little pricey. It was about £20 when I got it. It's like, you know, a little on the pricier side for a black and white book. I could, when I was reading it as well, it's a nice oversized kind of book as well. This isn't a small A5.
Sort of perfect bound, isn't it? Yeah. It looks like an art book almost, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, and it totally is. It's got one of my favourite covers that I've seen of the year. A wonderful sort of there's something a little bit goth noir, that's what I called it. There you go. I was about to say, it reminded me of you know when Russell Mark Olsen did a lot of sort of noir, sort of black and white images and of like old movies and things. It feels very much like that, but very haunting, with a wonderful sort of font going through it. It's well worth, I mean, I'll post the cover online and stuff.
We've become like an episode of the South Bank Show. I'm liking this now.
I know. It's
quite highbrow, haven't we?
It is great. If you go to johannaost.com, check out the store and stuff, because this is a creator that, because the beauty of the digital convention, I discovered their work and loved it. So that's my first one. I've got another one, which I'm going to leave for the end.
Okay. Do you want to go, Dan?
Yeah, sure. I got myself a copy of Karate Prom by Carl Starks.
The best name ever.
Yeah. I'd say recently, I got turned up a Carl Starks work from Sarah Harris, who bought me a copy of Sex Castle. At that point, I didn't know anything about him. So he's written Kill Them All, Rock Candy Mountain.
Previous guest.
Yeah. Carl's work is great. I love it. He's kind of got like a direct line for making comics that I enjoy, straight to my brain. And it's a great little cover. It's got the young girl's hands in as a garland. It's got like a karate belt tied around her wrist with a bouquet of flowers. And essentially what the story is, there's a high school kid who's in a karate tournament and he gets knocked out by the girl of his dreams, and the two of them get together and decide to go to the prom, but her vengeful ex wants to stamp that shit out, so he hires like these martial arts fighters to turn up at the prom and ruin it for them, and then the story goes from there. And there's lots of action, fighting, 1980s film reference. It feels like you're reading or watching something made purely out of 1980s nostalgia, but with like a kind of knowing wink. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. And you can get it straight from Carl Starks. He sells it through that link where you pay the money and you download the PDF, and I can't remember the name
Gumroad.
Of it. That's the one. Yep. Gumroad.
Oh, okay. I'll have a go at that. Yeah.
So I bought mine twice. But it was a bit stupid. You know when you kind of you download something and then you get like the one in brackets after the file name. You're like, oh, yeah. I've already bought this and downloaded it. So go, like you can buy it, you can get it for free, or you give them a few bucks and download it and check it out. I really enjoyed it. It's about 30-40 pages long. Nice unencumbered read and lots of fun.
Nice work, man.
Nice.
Shall I do mine?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dottie's Inferno by my buddy Bob Fingerman. It was coming. I know, I've been waiting for this book for ages. I love his work, and previous guest on the show and all around good guy. It opens on the back cover with a quote from Jean-Paul Sartre. It says, "Hell is other people," which I have to say I agree with. That's very true. Something we've experienced on this show numerous times. Not you, Eddie. We love you. But everyone else. It's 72 pages, full colour, $13.99. Released on Amazon on the 8th of December. And I think it's just come out through the pull list this week. I think it will have come in your pull list. So had the comic shops been open in London, you'd be able to get it. So Dottie, who is the central character for most of it, is died. She's a cool girl. So what's happened is she's got her pimp sends her to a room to meet a client, and it turns out to be a load of German businessmen all in towels ready to have sex with her. And she thinks, I'm not having this. So she walks out, slips on some vomit and dies. She gets sent to hell, but ends up working as the human resources department in hell, which is quite amusing. And this collects some of the stories. Some of the stories have appeared in Heavy Metal and Softwood, which was the one issue short-lived comic that a magazine that they brought out as well. But there's also loads of new stuff in it as well. And I'll talk a bit about that. But She gets there. She's greeted by a demon who looks like, who's the guy from The Room? That dude. What's his name? Is it Tommy Wiseau? Or something like
Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
He looks like that. And he ushers him in. And everyone, I interviewed Bob for this, and I had to say to Bob, lot of dongs, man. There's more dongs in this book than you'll see in any other book. Most of them are flaccid, so they're not insulting us, are they? They're not standing to attention, so that's fine. She gets out of the lift and she meets her boss in human resources, who's a sort of naked demon who berates her for being late. And she says, "You're all books and butt and rosy-cheeked winsomeness." And I love the way that Bob writes. He writes this lovely dialogue in it, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's full-on comedy. So she's given this this admin job, and they said, well, because you're in admin, you can have one piece of clothing. You can either have pants or a bra. And because she thinks she's going to be sitting down for most of the time, she has a bra. As you go through, she goes on various adventures, and she's actually quite a nice person. She's in hell because someone said that, you know, having sex with strangers for money is, you know, wrong. You'll go to this area of hell. So consequently, she's in an area of hell that's full of people who are a bit pervy. There's a number of classifications of boners throughout it. And these sort of police who turn up, who are dressed in kind of sort of bondage gear, come up and will beat you with their truncheons if you get a boner. And one of them is a fear boner. One of them says, "I'm sorry, I'm suffering from a fear boner." She travels around the areas of hell. And there's various moments. She licks the back of a toad, like a hallucinogenic toad, and ends up tripping balls and travels down the River Styx in a gondola and meets little demons, and a dog does a poo on her, and there's all this sort of just it's totally not safe for work, but just absolutely joyous in the extreme. It's just the perfect thing that you want to see in a heavy metal book, you know. It's that sort of thing. I wrote down some of the dialogue because the lines just made me chuckle. "Dong truncheon walloping," that's what someone says. "Being a brute arouses you," that's disgusting. "It's disciplinary," and then rather than clobbering time, you got throbbering time. My favourite line is "Lubrication Rhythm Nation." Now, I would buy an album called "Lubrication Rhythm Nation." I don't know about you, but I was certainly probably in the 80s. You know,
I give it a listen. Like,
yeah, "Rhythm is a Dancer." "Lubrication Rhythm Nation." I think that works. I like hell like I like my strap-ons. Low tech. "Demons like you strut around like your king shit of Turd Mountain." That's a lovely line.
Yeah.
The stories never go anywhere near what you're expecting them, and that's part of the pleasure of it all. There's a couple of backups by about a couple of worker demons who have a sort of overly friendly boss who is always taking them out for dinner, and they don't really know where it's going. And their job is every day they go to this drain and clear this drain, and it's always a particular person's arm that's been severed off and stuck down the drain, and that's his hell. Every day he has his arm chopped off and stuck in a drain, which they have to then go and clean. There's loads of little Easter eggs in it. Because I'm friends with Bob, and all we do is talk about our dogs together. You know, we Skype and talk about what our dogs are doing. I recognised his dogs in it. But there's also, other than Wizzy, you get Francis Bacon turns up as a waiter. Now, if anyone's aware of Francis Bacon, if I ever met Francis Bacon on a dark night, I would shit my pants. The bloke's the most sinister person you've ever seen in your life. And he turns up, which made me roar with laughter. It's published by Virus, which is a kind of new publishing arm of heavy metal. They've got a few books out. And I think I sent you the guys the pinups, didn't I? I sent you hell. This has got the best pinups ever. I don't think you're a hard match to find a book. You know, pinups are the coolness, aren't they, these days? We get our friends in to do pinups for us. And his friends just happen to be Howard Chaykin, Dave Johnson, Mike Mignola, and Dan Panosian and Bill Sienkiewicz. So that's not a bad.
Yeah.
That's not a bad little start. Not a little bad, is it? There may be people out. I mean, I actually genuinely think Bob is one of the, and this is why we're friends, because I'm such a fan of his work, is I genuinely think he's one of the cartoonists of his generation. I think he should be more well known. People should be, you know, falling over getting his book. And I think he's so good. He's got a real cartoony style. He has real fun with everything he does. There's real personality in everything he does. And if you get this, I'd also recommend the book Minimum Wage, which is out of print now, and it's not on Comixology, which is a real shame. I've checked on Amazon, there's still copies of it there, and I've checked on eBay, and you can get a good price on a copy there. But get Minimum Wage as well as Dottie's Inferno. Absolutely brilliant. He's got such an instinctual style to his if you follow him on his Facebook, he's got like a public Facebook page. you can see he does a lot of, he does a drink and draw. You know, there's this cool Hollywood drink and draw, which is full of Dave Johnson and Mike Panosians and, you know, all these sort of guys that go along to it. It's quite the thing. And he's got a bawdy sense of humour, but he does it the right way. Yeah, there's no picking on the poor person. He does it the right way, and there's some certainly some political figures he picks on, but he does it with actually genuinely a lot of humour. If you're not a fan of Dongs, you might not be a fan of this, but I actually found it hilarious. I think it's one of my favourite reads of the year. Absolutely brilliant. If you go to at Bob Fingerman on Twitter, you can find him at bobfingerman.com. And if you go to Facebook, his public-facing page is Bob Fingerman Cartoonist, and you can find loads of examples of his work. And he's always putting stuff out. Almost daily, there seems to be, oh, I did a warm-up sketch, and the warm-up sketch looks like something you'd hang on your wall, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, really good. Dottie's Inferno out of Heavy Metal. It's not on Comixology. I think it's a couple of weeks yet to go on Comixology. They'll probably coordinate that, I think, with the release of it on Amazon. But, yeah, go and get it. Pre-order it now.
Amazing. Okay, just to finish off. I'm not going to talk about a comic. I'm going to talk about a scroll.
Oh, yeah. From the man who bought you Cat's Bumholes.
Yeah. Cat's The Bumhole Cut. And The Wonderful Bastard Galaxia. I'm going to talk about a piece of work from Matt Simmons, our pal Matt Simmons. Turned up to a couple of the drinking drawers. And he's a great guy. Great guy.
Good egg.
And, yeah, once again, when I was chatting to him for the Thought Bubble weekend, he told me about Matt Simmons Presents Farron Jones Bram Stoker's Dracula. And it made me laugh. I immediately bought it. And this is so good. This is so good. What this is, basically, I say it's a scroll. It is basically, it's white art on black sort of paper. Presented on a 4 foot approximately sort of scroll, but it's sort of folded up. This is real Belt and Braces print, you know, basically doing artwork and then photocopying it, sticking it together, you know, to create this sort of effect. And he's even created like a mini sort of envelope to hold it all in with almost the title card of it, which gives it a real great flavor as well. What this is basically, we all know Bram Stoker's Dracula. If you don't, where have you been? But you don't know this version of it. This is, as it says on Matt's website, a retelling of John Harker's experience at Castle Dracula, casually dictated by Farron Jones, who read Dracula one time at university about a decade ago and adapted verbatim into a comic by Matt Simmons. And this is basically, you're down the pub with one of your friends, and one of your friends has seen a TV show, and they describe the TV show to you. But it's not what the TV show's like. It's like, well, this person was here, and then they fucking did this, and then that person was there, and they were like, what? That's the dialogue for Bram Stoker's Dracula. It starts off, and it's got wonderful sort of, I say black and white artwork. It is white on black artwork by Matt, which is wonderful as well. I mean, it immediately starts up, it says, it starts and fucking John Harker's travelling to Europe. And I immediately thought, this is going to be good. And sure enough, this is one of the exciting things about it. It ended with a to be continued. I thought it was going to be the whole thing. But no, there could be more. And Matt, I really do hope there's more, because this made me laugh so hard. I mean, I know Farron Jones is one of Matt's friends. And, like, he literally just described Dracula, and Matt has just taken notes and used it word for word. But there's even the classic, you've got to see it for yourself. There's one scene when the vampire brides turn up. And as it says here, there's the time John's in bed and three hot chicks turn up. They're creepy. And John Harker's like, man, these chicks are hot. I'm engaged. I hope I don't have sex with them. I might. Dracula shows up and I think full on throws one of them across the room. What the fuck? And Dracula's like, I fucking told you not to fuck with him. Don't be a dick. We're hungry. Eat this kid. And Dracula's holding up a baby that's going, wait, what? And there's so much to it. I absolutely love this. It was just a real good chuckle. And it perfectly sort of encapsulates that sort of humour. The artwork's wonderful. I like it that it has that sort of chalky sort of feel as well. It's almost like, I can imagine it, you know, if this was a huge blackboard and he's drawn on it. It's great style. The artwork's great. The humour's fantastic. And I hope this is part one of a series. I mean, I also like the fact that it was, when it turned up, it wasn't how I thought it was going to turn up, because it was sort of folded and sort of stuck together, and it's like it's almost two sheets of A3, but it's almost like one and a half sheets of A3 sort of stuck together. But I just love that. It's got the real DIY quality to comics that he's done, purely because this was an idea that made him laugh, and that's the ideas that make other people's laugh. And I absolutely love it. You can follow, and not enough people may know about this, because this is the sort of thing that you discover at a convention table. Do you know what I mean? And when you go to look at the comics, and then all of a sudden, what on earth is that strange thing? That's usually the thing I end up buying. So,
yep.
You can find him at Sheriff Freak on Twitter. Matt Simmons, comics.bigcartel.com. This is £4. Well worth checking out and getting more of it. And Matt's got like Bastard Galaxia, and like he's got lots of stuff on his store.
Yeah, I bought some stuff for him. It's funny stuff.
Funny. It's genuinely funny stuff.
Eddie, you did a comic about the musical Cats, the movie remake of it. I know you're a big fan of that.
Who isn't? Is it James Corden in it? Oh god.
Mm. Yeah, we apologise for him. I'm sorry about him.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Demand apology.
Not taking him back though.
We don't have him back.
Yeah, we're not having him back.
Yeah, yeah.
No. But there you go. What a wonderful set of comics from all over the world for you to check out. And yes, thank you again, Eddie, for joining us this week. It's been cracking. There's been and bringing a couple more titles to our attention as well. So,
of course,
that's the joy of the show notes. Although I need to sort out the links, etc. Moan, first world problems. If you want me to stop moaning, then you should email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. No, please don't. But let us know about if there's any comic events, or if there's any. Let's spread some joy. We're getting closer to Christmas and stuff. We want some good news, or maybe there's some comics-based charity drives or something you're doing around Christmas to help other people. Let us know about them, and we'll shout out about them. So let's help some other people.
There's plans away underfoot for the Secret Santa drawing thing we do.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do that.
I'm currently talking to Brandon, who organized it last time. He's on the case.
Stuff.
Amazing. I think I had Conan last year, which was great fun to draw. So email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be retweeting comics, we'll be shouting out about this show and general other joy, all for the love of comics. If you do the Facebook, do facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, and join the community Awesome Comics Talk, where there's a great group of people that are just there sharing artwork. I haven't checked it out for a few days. There's always
busy at the moment.
Going on.
Yeah,
always a lot of stuff going on there, whether it be drawing threads, questions about, I don't know, there'll probably be a discussion about documentaries or something now that we've mentioned it.
Yeah, I reckon there was. It'd be good if people can recommend any that sort of you can find quite easily on YouTube or whatever it is. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Awesome Comics Talk. Search for it on Facebook and join it. We're the admins, so we'll know if you've listened. That sounds a bit threatening, isn't it, when I put it like that?
Yeah.
That's right.
We've had one a day Kickstarter applications this week, back to normal again. Good to see.
Yeah. Everything balanced. You know what I mean?
Yep. Can't have the yin without the yang.
Yeah.
And you can't have this show without awesomecomics.podbean.com, which is where you can go to check out the show. And thank you very much for listening this week. We're also on other sort of things like Apple Podcasts. I've still got iTunes written on my notes. I had to check myself before I wrecked myself then. We're also on like Spotify, Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Cruising with Jay McDonald, Volume 2.
Are you going to write that?
Can you put that into Atomic Herc that she's still cruising around in like some nuclear powered
Cadillac?
Yeah,
everyone thinks it's a joke, but I'm serious. I want to both smash her up and do a comic about her. So, you know, if she's listening.
Oh my god! Oh my
please
god!
Please tell the email smash.
Would smash.
Jesus fucking Christ.
What? Well, that's not the worst thing I've ever said. You know, it's not.
Yeah. No, that's true.
But you don't, you're not aware of the uber celebrity in the UK, Jay McDonald, are you, Eddie? I'm guessing.
Unfamiliar.
You are?
No,
you're unfamiliar. Yeah, well, me and Adam have approached her. She's a sort of cruise liner singer who does some really good music, like really exceptional. And has a TV show on a minor television channel here. And me and Adam have approached her to do a comic about her where she travels around on a cruise line, does kung fu and kills people. And she's not replied yet, so we're waiting for a reply.
Which, in all seriousness, it's pro Jane McDonald, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. We like her. We genuinely like her. Yeah. Gareth Hopkins messaged me. He said, I went to look at her Instagram page and you've liked every single picture. I said, yeah, of course, because she's cool.
There you go. He's being like genuine, folks. Yeah. It's do you know what? It's not even satire. He's being
the same
genuine.
The same bit. This is the real shit.
Yeah. Please get in contact.
Yeah. There you go. And Jane, if you're listening... thanks for listening, Jane. We
love you, Jane.
Yeah.
We have got a spot next week if you're available.
Yeah, and we hope you enjoy some of the comics we talked about this week, and you've added them to your wish list. Maybe you could talk about them on Loose Women.
Yes. Doesn't have Loose Women for ages. What's wrong with you?
Well, I don't follow her fucking Instagram. Jesus Christ.
What was she using put up on her Instagram, Tony?
Oh, it's all about, at the moment, it's all about the new series she's got. So, Joe McElrelly, or what his name is, that geezer who ran one X Factor and no one remembers. He was on it this week or something. I think Gareth Gates was on her show the other day. That's a celebrity, isn't it?
The Jane McDonald, yeah. Jane and Friends.
That's it, yeah. It's very good.
I was pretty much right. I think it is around this time that it completely goes off the rails. This is This is pretty good. But,
I get the sense Eddie's just going, fucking hell, this needs to end. Come on.
I'm going through her Instagram looking, and you have liked every one of her selfies. I appreciate the consistency.
Yeah. He's nothing if not consistent. And that's partly because of his diet. Anyway, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
AtomicHercules.com for your pre-order on issue 3, which is in the bag, and I've started writing issue 4 today. There you go.
Yeah, we had a little bit of a preview just before.
I read you a little sequence.
Yep, and my God. if you liked what you've read so far, you ain't ready for this. But you should be ready for Dan Butcher. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
Yes, and go forth and back Elmarvo as well. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jester Diablo. And Eddie, thank you again. Where can people find you and Strangers, get copies of Strangers fanzine, etc.?
Thank you, guys. I'm on Instagram at strangers_fanzine. I think Twitter is just strangers_zine. And then to get the issues, it's strangersfanzine.bigcartel.com. Issue 4 is going to be out at the end of the month. And then, you know, with that comes the new publishing line with a couple of books. And then I also have my first shirt for sale as well, which is exciting.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I might have to order one. Wow. Yeah,
nice.
So now is the time to get on board.
This is the hotness, folks.
Yep. And it's just gonna keep getting bigger and bigger. And don't make it joke out of that, Tony. Don't make a joke.
Okay,
out of that,
but don't forget you can buy our books at neverironanything.bigcartel.com as well.
You can.
Yeah, I know. You know how we forget to promote ourselves.
I literally forgot it. Thank you to the people that bought stuff from us recently.
Definitely. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So. Yes, have a brilliant week, everyone. Wherever you are, we hope you're happy, healthy, and doing okay. And just basically reading and making comics. That's what That's what we're going to be doing.
So this last tweet, sign off the show, saw this one that said, what, in your opinion, is the worst thing that's happened in 2020? For me, it's the global coronavirus pandemic.
just reply with this tweet with a finger.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Oh, God. For me, it was cats. No, the movie, not my cats. Anyway, go for everyone. I don't really mean that. Don't tweet me. Don't at me, people.
Don't at me.
No. But do go forth and have a wonderful week. And from Dan, Tony, Eddie and myself, read loads of comics. Stay wonderful. We love you. And as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Hey. Stay awesome.
Hey! Finishing strong. Bye, everyone.
Bye. See ya.